From day to day, events were that Humpty Dumpty. Were that unreadable. That he refused to have a fixed and frozen policy, except at that hour of maintenance at all cost of the Union. Across that whole first year as president, in his state papers, making no reference to the very peculiar human issue that had brought about the war, the institution of slavery. With Senator Sumner and other very vehement and active anti-slavery men telling him he ought to issue an emancipation, he ought to free the slaves. His word being, we'll wait for events. 3 years later, he wrote to a Kentucky man in a letter that was published, "I have been controlled by events. I have been controlled by events." No one can have a fixed long-range policy with relation to our present foreign affairs, except that of being controlled by events. The future so hard to read, so completely beyond reading. Across the next 5 or 10 years, history is going to be very Humpty Dumpty. Things happening that confute those who have undertaken prophecy, or those who have had fixed policies. Of course, we can go to Lincoln and we find that he had wisdom of a certain kind, human wisdom, that he was putting in his own way something of the same thing that you find back across the ages from rare human spirits. In a message to Congress in December of 1862, he had that little sentence, "In times like the present, men should utter nothing for which they would not willingly be responsible through time and eternity." I think perhaps that ought to be on the walls of all broadcasting stations and newspapers. Fulton Lewis Jr. would look at it and say, but Ed Murrow of CBS would look at it and say, I know what it means. It's hard to be a current historian, but I'm going to do my best. I'm going to let my conscience be operating on every sentence that I send out over the air to the millions of listeners. He's one that I can point to for contrast. A man of sobriety. Some of them, you wonder what they've been taking. Inebriated with, intoxicated with the exuberance of their own verbosity. And in that same message, I think of this as one instance to be used in answering the question, that offhand question you get every once in a while. What would Lincoln do now? What would Lincoln do today? As though he would have proposals, schemes, plans, designs, drawn with the same wisdom as those when he was alive, meeting the present emergencies. Well, in this message to Congress in December 1 of 62, he laid a plan before Congress, not an elaborate plan, and he presented it with a cogency of reasoning, with a ruthlessness of logic that I sometimes think surpasses anything that he ever did. He's asking that Congress should pass a measure providing that the federal government could buy the slaves in the border, slaves that had not yet seceded. He saw that if there was an Emancipation Proclamation, it would seize, it would confiscate the property in the border states. This peculiar livestock property that was on the tax books, along with horses, cattle, sheep. Giving the names of the slaves and how much they were worth individually. The Constitution authorized it, and a series of decisions by the Supreme Court. It was legitimized property. And Lincoln had a feeling that in these border slave states that had not seceded, it would be a matter of equity, decency, to buy the slaves and pay for them. So that if and when the Emancipation Proclamation was issued the following January the 1st, injustice would not be done those owners of this particular property in the slave states, and would make some of them who were earnest Union men still better Union men. And Congress, by its silence and by its complete inaction, said, in effect, and in the modern vernacular, to hell with it. What would Lincoln do today? He would be for the United Nations with every drop of his blood. Of course he would. In several state papers, here and there in his writings, you find that phrase, the family of man. Referring to mankind the wide earth over, the family of man. So that you know he had a feeling that there was a unity about all that was human around the globe. When I was in college, I happened to read the Bookman magazine, and one month the editors reported a discussion they had had one day that ran long around the question, what is the most detestable word in the English language? And after their long discussion ended, they were agreed, they were unanimous, on one word being more detestable than any other in the English language, and that's the word, exclusive. Yeah, exclusive. When your mind, heart, and personality are exclusive instead of inclusive, you are shutting out from your life and personality forces and factors that will nourish you, that will be something worthwhile for the roots and tentacles of your personality. You can go to Shakespeare or Walt Whitman, or I would say Lincoln, and you'll find There were times in the course of their lives that they were inside of murderers. They didn't have that instinct of repulsion that goes with the exclusive. I think it was Peoria when the Ku Klux Klan was rioting in the early 1920s that a fellow starts a restaurant and puts a sign in the window, 100% American. He knew the size, the measurement, the proportion of his Americanism. Not like Ivory Soap, 99 and 44 100%. No fine fractions, not 99 point something, but 100% American. And a bird comes along and starts a restaurant across the street and puts a sign in the window, 200% American. Doubling the ante. And the first one comes across the street and says to the second, "What do you think you're doing? Want to get your block knocked off? What's the big idea here? 200% American." And the answer came, "Well, just hold your horses. Keep your shirt on." Now, it just happens. You hate the niggers, the Catholics, and the Jews, but I hate the whole goddamn human race. I'm glad it happened in Peoria or somewhere else about that time, because it illustrates this word exclusive, and it illustrates what Lincoln meant by that little phrase. At least once, I recall, he capitalized it. The family of man. And we can go to wisdom like that, that appears so often in his writings, and wisdom having to do with personal conduct, some of it ancient. And we find in this very peculiar message to Congress one of the most vivid and eloquent little paragraphs that he ever wrote. I think it was at least half of his motivation there was to make a record. He was making a record. He was putting it down, what he had in mind in that particular crisis. And then he was making an appeal to the members of Congress. And he wasn't striving for the absolute simplicity of speech that he sometimes did in a political address. He used, for instance, in this closing paragraph, he used the verb disenthrall. Disenthrall. I think it's the only time I ever met it in Lincoln's writings. A thrall in the old Anglo-Saxon law was a bondsman, fastened to the land, a serf. Bonds holding him. If he could break loose from the bonds, he would disenthrall himself. He'd be a free man. And there were these sentences along toward the end of that message. No personal significance can spare one or another of us. The fiery trial through which we pass will let us down in honor or dishonor to the latest generation. We must disenthrall ourselves. In this present hour, we've got to re-examine all old ideas that we've had. And we've got to have no fear whatsoever about the entertainment of new ideas, new projects. Everything laid before us by whatsoever inventive mind is worth looking at in this hour and doing the best that we can with all of our faculties.